one and all, once again to Dirt World in episode 147. I'm joined this week by Martin.
Hello.
And Daniel.
Muddy. I'm really muddy. Not really, but...
Yes.
Well, tires was a real thing.
We'll get to that in a second. It's actually a decent week for news, but it's one of those weeks that you kind of dread, because almost most of it is... not necessarily bad news, but I guess negative news, which isn't necessarily the same thing.
It's news that people perceive as negative, but is it really? People just like to make fusses over things, and that's coming from me.
Well, I mean, some of it is, and we'll get to that, and some of it is stuff that people perceive as negative, and we'll get to that as well, because there is good reason for that. But before we get there and we talk about the fun weekend news, we will kick it off, as we generally do, with what we've been saying, and since he's already kind of hinted at it, and his review actually went up this weekend, Daniel, tell us about Spin Tires.
It's not a game for me. I'll tell you that. I spend more time shouting at it, because it's just really frustrating, and I kind of think that's part of the game, is you get really frustrated with it, and then... you end up being able to do what you wanted to do, and that's kind of the draw for some people. But it's just not for me. I was never born to drive trucks through mud. And that's, you know...
I don't know if that's anybody's destiny. I don't know if I know that. But, I mean, I guess... I mean, it's actual trucks. It's not... because I was gonna say, like, for us... I don't know if you folks have it, but, like, mudding is an actual thing people do here.
Where you get yeah, well, we don't have the sort of terrain for it in this country, so...
Fair
but, yeah,
enough.
It's actual trucks, you get a Jeep, you get... and the rest of it, the rest of the vehicles you get are proper trucks. And you have... the game just says, here's a truck, here are two trucks, here are three trucks, go. And you can fill out the map. You can deliver lumber from one side of the map to the other. There's not a whole lot of direction that the game gives you. It's just up to you to sort of do whatever you want, I guess. Which is kind of nice, because in, like, most games are all about, do this in this set amount of time and make sure you don't fuck it up. So I guess Spin Tires is kind of relaxing and frustrating at the same time, because you can do what you want, but you get stuck in mud a lot. And the gimmick is that the mud, it actually behaves like you would expect mud to, because otherwise getting stuck in mud wouldn't be very fun, would it? And it does pretty well, actually. The mud looks like how you expect it to when you get your wheels stuck. There was a point where... I was trying to work out what all the things on the UI did and what all the buttons did, and I spent so long that my truck was slowly sinking, and I was in the garage area and I couldn't move the truck because it was just sunk into the mud, and no matter what I did, I would just wheel spin.
Great.
Yeah.
I probably know the answer to this, but I'm curious. Does it have any form of multiplayer?
It does, actually. And... it's the multiplayer is just like the single player, except there's another person with you, or another three people. It's four player maximum, and you just drive trucks together. I don't know if you can help other people out, because there aren't that many games like available at one time, and the netcode seems to be a bit buggy in the sense that whenever I joined a game, the other people would just sit at the garage and not do anything. So, I mean, I would assume you can help each other out. I mean, it'd be a pretty bad trucking mud simulator if you couldn't help me.
Well, actually, I was curious if it was actual, like, real-life trucking. But, like, it's not an actual multiplayer. It's just, like, you're talking to somebody else on the radio to keep you busy.
Oh, no, it's just other people. It's other people in trucks with you.
Oh, so they're in the truck with you?
No. They have their own trucks. So they drive around... independently of you driving around the same maps.
They should make it like a cross-country race where they say teams of two work together to get across there as fast as possible. Like if your partner gets stuck, you have to pull them out of the mud or something. That would be really cool.
I don't know. The game's not really the, like you when you, you don't really can't really explain this until you sort of show it, but like you get stuck so easy and you can spend a long time getting yourself unstuck. So racing wouldn't really work.
Again, that's why I said if it was like a co-op competitive type deal. Like, I think because you mentioned like there's one thing where you can like use a cable to pull yourself out.
Yeah.
Like if you had a partner and like they attached it to pull you out and stuff like that. In that way, where kind of like F4 Dead, where you can kind of go on your own.
I think you can do that. Yeah, but there's not much to the multiplayer other than that.
Okay. How much is it?
It's about $15, I want to say. Let me have a look.
I don't think so. It's like €25.
Really?
Yeah.
Let me have a look. If Steam would ever load the page.
Just to say, because I think that $15 sounds reasonable. It's $30.
Yeah, it's American. £20. £20. That's a bit expensive for what the game is, because there's not a lot there.
How do you think it compares to Euro Truck Simulator 2?
Well, you can't really compare them. That's the thing, is like Euro Truck Simulator is about
it's you're driving trucks and delivering stuff, so in that sense they're similar.
Yeah, but like Euro Truck Simulator is to say like simulates roads in the sense that you have speed limits and you have to not hit other people and you have to make sure that.
Well, it's just a different environment in that sense that's being simulated.
Yeah, but like you have in Euro Truck, you have a time limit, and you have obviously you lose money if you damage your cargo. Whereas a time limit is not a thing you have to worry about in Spin Tires. You can take literally a year to deliver the lumber, but the game's not really going to care because in Euro Truck Simulator, like. The game does a lot to make the journey enjoyable, like it gives you a radio and stuff, and it's very relaxing to play, but like the whole point of Spin Tires is not the outcome, but the journey itself, okay. And all of the trials you go through in this environment, getting your truck stuck and winching yourself out, and you know, and...
So yeah, it's not about doing specific goals, but seeing how you... can do it, and what challenges will
it go? It's more about the problem solving of getting to the objective than the objective itself.
Yeah,
and like you mentioned, there's also unlockables. What type of unlockables are in this game?
If you find a truck just lying around in the environment, you drive next to it and you unlock it. Like most of the map is covered up, so you have to go and uncover it by driving to certain points. And other than that, there's just, like, extra garages. There's not a whole lot of unlocks. And they don't even save across... They're not even persistent across saves, which is really weird. I don't understand why that is the case. But, yeah. It's just about the pure driving, not really anything else.
So it's more like... pure simulation and less game.
Yeah, that's exactly it. But it looks really nice. The environment is really looks great, and sounds nice, and all the presentation is there, apart from the weird, very unusable UI.
Yeah, the UI looks very, how should we say, Eastern European.
Well, and there are times where, in order to get your winch to work, you have to click to bring the cursor up and stop the camera moving around, and you have to click the advanced button, and then you have to click, then you drag from your winch spot on your truck to what you want to winch to, and while you're in the advanced mode of the UI, you can't move your truck, so then you have to click advanced again. And then start moving. It's kind of... The game doesn't tell you it. You have to work all this out yourself, which is kind of irritating. At the start, it just says, here's what these buttons kind of do go.
On the other hand, that can be refreshing.
Yeah, but
to not be told everything.
Yeah, but you know, it doesn't tell you that you can't drive your truck while you're in it in the advanced mode, and that'd be a nice thing. And
I'm still kind of interested if I had a better machine to play it myself. To be honest, though, I just think from what I've seen, the whole mud physics thing looks fun in the sense of that's probably really challenging to drive through.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
You can get stuck 20 meters outside the garage.
Yeah.
So it's
interesting just because, you know, in reality, I'm never going to drive through something like that.
Yeah.
But in a game, that's fine if it's simulated well and in that sense interesting.
Yeah, so it's definitely an interesting experience at the very least. Just does it's not have, for the faint of heart.
Does it have different weather, or is it just like?
I haven't experienced different weathers, but like there's a day night cycle, and like it's hard enough during the day, and at night time you can't see shit.
Well, I just figured with the mud, since you know it's usually rain.
just imagine rain. How much worse it would probably get.
Yeah, but that would change up the gameplay and give a reason for this mod. Okay. But yeah, like I said, your full review is up on the site if you want to check that out. Martin, have you been playing anything new?
Not really. I only really finished up Shovel Knight, which I really liked.
And I was happy to find out there's a butt code.
What code?
A butt code. There's a code that you can input, and it will change, I think, any reference to shovel, health, magic, and something else to butt in the game. It's one of those really immature Easter eggs, but it's so awesome, because you actually don't see many of those anymore.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's one of those stupid things that just, there's actually a ton of them. There's like giant mode and there's like Jody mode. But butt mode is the one that sticks out, of course, because it's the butt mode.
And otherwise, for some reason, I felt the urge to play some World of Tanks. And I have to say, I think the gameplay is fun and interesting, I think, if you're into driving a tank, I mean, and I kind of am, but I think their free-to-play model is kind of terrible.
Yeah, just that's the problem I have with it when I played it.
But unlocking tanks is incredibly grindy. They have... you have to man your tanks with crew, and they have to level up, but that's incredibly slow, except if you want to put some money into it. Or, and the worst part is, you can actually buy better ammo for real money.
Well, not only that is...
I mean, you can theoretically buy that ammo for credits, but it's incredibly expensive. I couldn't even fathom buying it at the point I am at. So... And I have first-hand experience, like, if someone has that basic gold ammo, which has, like, incredibly high piercing power, so that means they, no matter what tank they are reusing, they have a way easier time getting through your armor.
So it's pay to win?
Yeah.
Kinda? It's not purely pay to win. I mean, a better player will probably still come out on top, but it's sketchy. It's really sketchy.
It's like on the verge. On the verge.
So, that part I'm not too fond of. That's kind of why I already stopped playing, to be honest. Although I did like the gameplay. I mean, I think tank gameplay is interesting. Simulating a tank is something interesting. There are no longer a lot of games that do tanks, except, I mean, there are probably some hardcore simulations still out there, but those are a bit too much. I think World of Tanks is a nice middle ground. It's not really arcadey, it's not super simulation-y, it's right in the middle. And that makes the gameplay interesting. I've seen that there is some other tank game out for kind of everything, iPad, Mac, whatever. It's called Battle Supremacy, and that's not a free-to-play game. I'm currently thinking maybe checking that one out.
I don't know if this is on PS4 yet, but I know that War Thunder has tanks now.
Yeah, the problem is that update is exactly not out yet on PS4.
Oh.
Currently, still only the planes. Once War Thunder gets the tanks, I will probably check War Thunder out again, because that game had way better free-to-play model.
Yeah.
And also played some Dota 2, because the International is coming up.
Oh,
I still like it.
We don't have that in the news this week. The not the Dota stuff, but the Hearthstone stuff.
Yeah, but Dota 2, still good.
I was going to ask, since you are a new owner of a second Wii U, have you tried Tank Tank Tank?
I tried it then when I had my previous Wii U. I wasn't a fan.
No, it's an arcadey game.
It's very arcadey.
Which works for some people. It's really a shame it doesn't have any type of online.
Yeah, that's exactly the issue. If it had online, I probably would have been at least a bit more into it. Also, yeah. The single player is just total garbage.
Which is why I said, because it had, you know, like the four-player tank stuff and the whole goofy take a picture of yourself and it hangs over your tank. It's really kind of neat for online gameplay.
Yeah, I mean, World of Tanks or something like that, it's not a huge step up from like Tanking Tank, if I remember the basic controls correctly. I think it still was turn turret, drive, and stuff like that. But, okay, there's a bit more physics-y stuff going on in stuff like World of Tanks, and you have to worry a bit more about where you hit someone because of armor penetration and stuff like that. So, a bit more complexity is what I kind of looking for in a tank game.
Okay. As for me, I've been playing the same stuff I was playing last week. Shovel Knight, Martin said, continues to be well. Like I said, an extra gem, finding out about the butt code and all those other codes that's hidden in it. I wrote up my review of Armadillo. And it's pretty much the same thing I said last week. It's a fun game. It has some technical issues, and they're working on that. But yeah, it still kind of freezes up, and it's replicable. Yeah, you can create it over and over again, so it's not like a one-off thing. And I still don't like the structure of the game for the most part. It's like I said, it has some of the best and worst parts of the N64 PlayStation era type platformers, where like, you have to collect a bunch of stuff, and that usually means having to repeat the same stage over and over again once you get something later on that works. It's kind of like the bad form of a Metroidvania game. And the fact that you also have to find these secret levels in order to collect this stuff that's needed for boss battles and other stuff. Like, again, if it's needed for you to complete the game, it shouldn't be hidden, or it shouldn't be separate from the main game. It should be something that you can see and do always. I did discover the secret stages, which is really awesome. I don't know if either one of you want to play it, but the first one is like a retro-themed 3D stage, and it has, you get an assist from Shovel Knight in it, which is a really awesome cameo. And actually, like with some of the indie developers are kind of doing now with their crossover games, where I think Shovel Knight's also in, I want to say he's in Mighty No. 9, or he's in one of those indie Mega Man X themed games that's coming up. So it's really nice that they're kind of, you know, like it's kind of supporting each other, and it does help. It's free publicity across the board. If you like this game, you can find a character in that, and if you play this game and you haven't played the old one, you can find a character. So it's really neat that they're all kind of doing that stuff. What else have I been... I think that's pretty much it. Been playing... I tried Gotham City Impostors because it's free on the Xbox 360 for the month. It's part of their Games with Gold, which I don't think we mentioned last week. I think Microsoft is... I think what they're doing with that is really stupid on the Xbox One. And that they're repeating the game already. Or keeping the game going,
yeah, but
I guess.
But you can't... They don't have any content coming out on it, so...
I guess that's the problem, but yeah, it's really... It's like, oh, if you didn't get Max and the Max the Cursed Brotherhood, here's Max the Cursed Brotherhood some more. Yeah, I get that it's a content problem, they don't have enough, and honestly, especially the way they work their games with Gold, they don't have enough old games to do it, because... I mean, Gotham City Impostors is, what, from 2010, 2011? 3-4 years old.
Yeah, that is an old game.
Yeah, I didn't think about it either until I started it up, and like it's like copyright 2000. It's one of those years, so it's like 3-4 years old at this point. It's a pretty goofy Call of Duty type game, which is really fun. One of the things, it kind of takes off with, I guess, Sunset Overdrive and Titanfall are getting credit for now, which has kind of given you a lot more freedom in your traversal options, mostly because it's Batman themed, you get a lot more gadgets. So you can get like a grappling hook, which you can use to kind of pull yourself across the map. You can get a glider, which, you know, you can use to kind of, once you get enough air, you can kind of glide around and do like a ground pound. You can get skates, which allows you to go fast and jump off ramps and various different stuff. And again, it's nice, and it's something that we're seeing more now, is that it's a... Not necessarily a kid-friendly shooter, but it is a lot more, you know, it isn't as violent and gory as some of the other first-person shooters we get. So, yeah, it's worth checking out. I mean, any game is worth checking out for free. I will never begrudge you for checking that out. But yeah, it's on Xbox Live Gold for the 360 until July 15th? I don't, is it, whatever, one of those days. It's the 15th or 16th.
So, also, as I just saw that apparently the tank update is out on PS4 for War Thunder, so I will probably try that later.
It seems like the tanks sort of handle better in War Thunder as well, to me anyway. So
yeah, I will check it out and probably report next week.
Yeah.
It's you know, we are right now at a time... middle of the summer, where basically almost nothing is coming out.
Yeah, I think...
And it's always, for me, like, the time to... Let's check out a couple of free-to-play games.
Yeah, or games that are... I mean, it's usually a good reason the Steam sale usually hits, but I think a lot of people were kind of disappointed in what they had to offer. But yeah, I mean, this is why we usually do our backlog stuff in the summer, and we want to do a retrocast sometime this summer as well, because, I mean, even for indie games, there isn't a ton lined up for the rest of the summer.
Actually, it's a shame, I think. Indie games would greatly benefit for coming out in the summer.
Yeah, but, I mean, we just had Guacamelee, Super Turbo, Deluxe Edition, or whatever.
Yeah. I think Shovel Knight hit... Pretty big as well, I think.
Yeah, Shovel Knight was, but you know, Shovel Knight's out at PC and Wii U
and US only.
Well,
you want to buy it on a Nintendo device.
Yeah.
if you want to buy it where it should be played, should I say?
But for example, I'm really looking forward to Helldivers. That was supposed to come out in summer, but we still don't have a concrete release date.
Yeah, and I think Gunvolt Azura is in late August, which. I'm not as keen on anymore, because it really looks really basic when they show more and more gameplay of it, but maybe... But yeah, it just seems like there's this huge gap that somebody should be... But we say this every summer.
Yeah. It's usually the same 2 months. It's June and July.
Yeah.
And early August is usually also dead.
Yeah, because, I mean, it really doesn't kick back until around Madden time.
Yeah.
At 8 August, early September. but yeah, I thought indies, because I mean, especially with Microsoft, who pretty much made indies a summer thing with the Summer of Arcade. As far as I know, that's not a thing this year. I don't even remember last year. I'm sure there were games last year, but...
They kind of stopped doing that stuff.
And not only that, it's those were good promotions, and they had some really good games in them.
Yeah, but over the course it got worse and worse, and I guess now they just stopped.
And especially in a, when we were at a point where Microsoft needs to win some kudos back from the indie scene, because they're not doing too hot in terms of their reputation with the indies right now.
I don't know. It's just really weird that... I mean, and I guess the other thing is, at least in my experience, a lot of indie games are really terrible with release dates. So we might end up with a bunch of them that we don't know coming out like August or something, but they don't really announce the release dates that far in advance, so it's hard to get excited for them. Like, you could be excited for them,
for all we know, they could still come... Helldivers, for example, could still come out this month.
Yeah, we don't know.
we could be
saying this, and like tomorrow will come around, and like 15 of them are released or something. Because again, a part of it is because a lot of them, and I guess this will be a perfect case to start our news segment, is a lot of them don't necessarily understand the cost and time for development, so they kind of have this window which they can't finish, so they get pushed back. Or, in the case of Mighty Number 9, you go back to Kickstarter for funding, which has rubbed some people the wrong way.
I don't understand why.
I think because a lot of people are saying that they got close to $4 million, and that was way beyond their expectations, so it shouldn't have...
But they're doing stretch goals.
They're doing what everybody does, which is to say they open it up so if people want to back and they didn't before, they can do it. And they're going to add extra stuff to the game if people do it.
And I think that's the problem. It depending on how you read it, I think some people see that as like they've had enough money, they should have been able to. Like, I think one of the options is like North American localization as far as voice acting go.
The thing is full voice acting, which you didn't have before, just text, which I would have been fine with. Mega Man was just text, so yeah, whatever, fine.
Like, What I don't like is they announced that there was going to be an animated TV show, which is to say, if we really want this to be a franchise, guys, I mean, come on, wait for your first game to come out.
Yeah, but that's a bit much.
Well, that I was going to get to that, and I think that is somewhat different and the same as well. In the case that this feels like it's a animated series that they announced in hopes of getting it crowdfunded or getting an outside investor in it. Because, as far as I know, it's mostly just a pipe dream at this point. Like, they had the teaser, but it's not due for 2 years, and they don't have any funding. So it's basically just like a test footage to get somebody on board with it. Because they also made sure that they said that none of the money from the Kickstarter for the game is going into this project.
Yeah. And I just wanted to add, like, saying for people like, hey, they got 4.7 million or whatever it was, and why can't they do full voice acting? Well, all that money is supposed to go into all the stretch goals that unlocked. For example, they have to bring that game to basically every platform under the sun. That costs money.
Yeah. And again, it doesn't seem like there's any problem with the actual development. It's just I think that's how people are perceiving it, because usually when somebody goes back to Kickstarter, it does... And it's not the first time that's happened. I think this is why. I think a lot of people are kind of getting burnt on the Kickstarter stuff, because, there was a, study, like 3 out of 4 games that were Kickstarter don't come out or something like that, or like the finished product you get isn't what you expected.
You should see the Mighty Number 9 stuff more like something like Star Citizen is doing. I mean, that game had like a Kickstarter or Indiegogo or whatever it had, and then it also opened up to, hey, you can still get in on this, and it will make it possible that we do even more stuff for that game.
Or basically every game that got Kickstarted that is now on Steam Early Access.
Yeah, that as well. Really? Like,
Yeah. So, we've had this discussion before with Kickstarter. It is a crapshoot. There's no easy way around that.
So far, all the things I Kickstarter worked out, but it all involves, like, hey, these are people I know out of this industry. They are not going to fuck this up.
Well, I mean, and even then, it depends on what you mean, because, like, you get the Double Fine stuff where they ended up having to split the game in order to get it out.
It did come out, though.
Yeah, yeah. It's just that you didn't get the full game when they said.
Not yet. I'm still getting it.
But yeah, that's what I mean. It's like, it comes out, it's just not... Again, it's one of those things where I was saying about they don't necessarily take into account how much time it's actually going to take for them to finish the game and stuff like that.
But let's be honest, the Double Fine thing also was like, kind of at this point, the early days of video game Kickstarters.
The early days, 2 years ago.
If you think about it, it was one of the first big ones.
And well, it was the first big one.
It was the first big one. It
shows in how other Kickstarters were run and how other games are being released. For example, let's say Wasteland 2, for example, that seems to go really well. I mean, it's also an early access to get some more money, but the beta is running. They are on track to release it in time. So, yeah, it shows that people have learned from what happened to Double Fine, for example.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what you get for being in the front of the ship.
Yeah.
When you're in the tail end, people are going to get suspicious. I don't know which order to go with this, so I guess we're going to talk about, if we're talking bad business, we might as well talk about Murdered Soul Suspect before it was frozen down. And this was, I mean, we're used to studios frozen down. I thought this was more of a story because of the, after a while, it was the YouTube persona.
Oh, don't get me started on this.
I have not heard about anything.
So if you've heard of a person named Darkside Phil, you probably know what's coming.
No, I don't know who it is.
So Darkside Phil is most known because he is not very good at video games, and he tends to blame him not being very good at video games on the games themselves. And he bought Murdered Soul Suspect, and he liked it. Okay, fine, you bought a game, you liked it, you're upset that the studio closed down. But he decided that for some reason IGN was responsible for the closure of Murdered Soul Suspect because whoever reviewed the game didn't think the game would set the world on fire. And he had a huge tirade about it, as if to say that IGN, it's IGN's and obviously critics in general's responsibility to sell games, and if people lose their jobs because of bureaucracy with the publisher or because the game wasn't too great and it didn't sell too well, that's their fault.
Yeah, that's already the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah.
The games press is there to inform the consumer, and then the consumer makes the decision on if they want to buy a game or not based on what they know from the press.
Is you could say that the game is the best game ever made, and it doesn't mean people are going to go out and buy it.
And we've seen that before.
Yeah, we've seen it many times.
We've seen
some of
games,
my favorite games ever had that happened to them.
Yeah, we've seen great games. We've seen games review well and sell poorly. We've seen games review poorly and sell well. So, I mean, there's no real correlation. Like I said, it was a YouTube persona, so I didn't really take any stock in that. But there were some indie developers who kind of came out and said that they feel the same thing. And I kind of find it funny because a lot of the times, myself included, we do kind of blame the games media for being kind of shills. They're kind of, they're enlightened PR or whatever it is. And now, apparently from the other side, they get complaints that they aren't shills enough. They don't spend enough time worshipping how awesome your game is.
And this is the thing, is who was it that lambasted Cliffy B for complaining that Eurogamer only gave Gears of War 3 and 8? It was everybody, and now all of a sudden everything seems to have changed and they should be inflating scores in order to keep people's jobs. That's not how the free market works. Like, if you are there to tell people if things are good or bad, you tell them whether they're good or bad, and if they're bad, then, you know, that's not your fault. It's the fault of the people that made that thing and decided to release that thing, and, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
not to mention, here's the thing, is in this case, we're talking about a company that was basically shutting down the day the game came out. which means
they were gone.
They couldn't be saved at all. The game could have been like the bestseller ever, and it wouldn't. The company still wouldn't be around.
I mean, Airtight Games has not been doing great for a while. I mean, they released. I mean, Unfolds for Games, right? The Dark Void guys,
and they made Quantum Conundrum, which wasn't that great either.
Yeah, and then apparently they made two mobile games, and one Ouya game.
Well, but even even before reviews started coming out, they were letting people go, so they were pretty much not on for this world in general. Like I said, it sucks when these companies go under, but at the same time, people aren't. I don't buy pity games. I don't buy a game to support a developer or a publisher just because I feel like I need to provide somebody's job. I buy it because it's the best experience for me. And from what it looks like, Murder Soul Suspects wasn't worth it. It wasn't worth the investment they put into it. Yeah. And it's a shame. And reviews aren't there to be job security. They aren't, it's a bum rep. It's the same thing that people say with you don't get bonus pay unless you get an 85 on Metacritic or something. That sucks, but at the end of the day, it's not a reviewer's job to keep you in credit. It's not a reviewer's job to get you that bonus. It's your job to make a product that reviews well.
The thing that I understand the least is, you wouldn't see anything like this from the art community, or the music community, or the movie community. So why do we get it? Why is it a problem with games? Why do we think that this is a thing when it has not been a thing in any other medium ever? And it never will. If it is bad, there are going to be people that are out there that will tell you that a thing is bad. They are not. It's not their jobs to make sure that you still have a job because you played a part in a thing that wasn't the greatest thing ever. Why was this? Why are we even having this conversation?
It was a funny conversation, and it was different, so there was that.
I think maybe we can talk about this GameSpot thing really quickly, because it kind of relates to this in a way. I just thought it was weird.
This is a tough one. I can understand why you think it's weird, but at the same time, who else are you going to get to do that?
Well, first we'll say what I mean. GameSpot is, together with Activision, doing a show about Call of Duty, and I think that is stepping a line when it comes to editorial working together with a publisher. The show is called Aim Down Sights. There's one episode up at this point. And when you watch it, it's like the start of it, they're saying from now until November, so basically they got money from Activision to do it until the game comes out. They are going to do a weekly show, I think, with news, interviews, and everything about Call of Duty. And in the background, they have a TD that tells you should totally pre-order Call of Duty because it gets you something. I don't think that's the right thing to do for an editorial site like GameSpot.
I hope they don't complain. I hope nobody at GameSpot ever complains about people that complain about sponsorships and stuff like that, especially considering I still don't think that GameSpot have shaken the whole Jeff Gerstmann thing. You know, this is not the thing that they need to improve their image. And this is the thing I expect of IGN. I always thought of GameSpot, I thought highly of GameSpot despite this Jeff Gerstmann thing. And
yeah.
I don't know, this isn't helping.
Yeah, I think it doesn't look good at all.
This is not journalism. You're supposed to be journalists. The role of journalists is to, it should be a respectable one. Why would you not want to be a journalist? And yet, this happens.
Well,
this might as well be a marketing piece Activision themselves put out. I mean, hell, some publishers do put shows like that out.
Yeah.
I mean, Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's technically what Sunset TV is.
Yeah.
And I feel like this is this kind of, I mean, beyond GameSpot or any other individual site, I think this kind of goes back to the core problem of the game media, which is the only people who are willing to invest in advertisement for game sites are game companies. And it's like, you know, like newspapers don't necessarily, it's not like newspapers only cover what, you know, they don't get advertisements from only what they cover. But game sites only get avenues from games, because that's really the only market that games cater to, is the games, the game and audience. Like, you don't get like moms and dads and children who are visiting IGN and GameSpot for, you know, stuff like that. So it's a crapshoot.
Yeah, but games advertisements, if it's like thing, I don't know, like banners on a site or something, that's a really different thing than a video thing that's produced by your editors. It's icky.
Yeah.
Because it's no longer, that means your sales department is not doing a great job of separating them from the editorial.
News is what somebody does not want you to print. All the rest is advertising.
Well, okay, I was about to say that's not necessarily news. And I think that and we had this discussion last week with the preview stuff. That's more investigative, and I think that's the aspect that the game and media misses out on. It's like, not necessarily editorial. So editorial for the game and media is pretty much the same thing. Either a company's doing really poorly, how they're doomed, or a company's doing really well and how they conquer the competition. That's pretty much the type of editorials you'll get. And then you'll get previews and reviews because that does well. And you'll get, like, random lists and stuff like that. What they need to focus on is kind of what Ed and I hate to say this because I used to hate the site so much, and they still are guilty of this. It's kind of what Kotaku does with, you know, like, what went wrong with this game company. These were prototypes of canned games. These are the stories behind people getting fired and stuff like that. The problem with a lot of the Kotaku stuff, and I guess the game and media in general when they do that stuff, is most of that is after the fact. Like, the most active one would be the Crytek story right now, which is, you know, like, we're getting the inside scoop as it's happening, and that makes sense. I guess we should update that situation, especially for Martin, who asked this very same question last week, is why are the employees so dedicated to these companies? Apparently they aren't, because he found out that people stopped going to Crytek UK.
Smart people. apparently, like, around 100 is what I read, stopped going to there.
Yeah, which is a big problem in general, because the home front is like their bread and butter right now. It's the only game they're kind of working off our outside funding source, and if that's not being worked on, they're not getting any money in, which means they aren't paying the people to make the game, which means they aren't making the game that they're being paid for, which means they aren't going to get more money, which just is going to accelerate the fact that they're going out of business.
Probably. Also means don't expect Homefront 2 anytime soon.
And it, like I said last week, it's just sad because it... What was it? There was a... I can't remember what magazine it was, but they recently... The latest issue is about how Crytek saved this UK developer from almost certain doom, you know?
Wasn't it Edge?
Yeah, I think it was. And it's just like... These people just can't catch a break, and it's really sad.
It's actually kind of funny because it sounds like Deep Silver might build him out, and Deep Silver, I don't know where they get this money from.
Well, they had Deep Silver got their money because they bought games that were basically done in the forms of Metro Last Light and Saints Row 4.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Though it's like they are going to become like they're going to be the mid tier developer across the board this generation. They're just going to come in when the company's going out of business and be like, okay, we'll take this off your hands and we'll buy it up for cheap. I assume that's probably what they would do with Homefront. It's like wait until Crytek's on his deathbed and needs to sell something to make money. And you go in and you'll get them and you'll get the development studio for cheap.
Well, that's the way it happens. Crytek managed to get hold of the license in the first place.
I'm sorry, I wanted to say that Deep Silver is kind of a subsidiary of Koch Media, who are responsible for games, films, and other software and stuff like that. They are basically just a small part of kind of a big company.
Yeah.
But so, even then, you can't just continue throwing money at...
Oh, no, no, no. But like Daniel said, they have been pretty smart in what they acquired.
Well, because Saints Row was a guaranteed profit maker because, you know, Saints Row 3 was the most successful game that THQ had in a long time.
Well, even, I mean, even less
than even if it didn't sell like Saints Row 3 for Deep Silver, it probably would still have been a success because
they didn't pay for it.
Yeah,
and they don't expect those ridiculous numbers.
Yeah.
That might change over time, but at this point...
Yeah, at some point, they're going to have to actually start funding these from the get-go, not, you know... Like they mentioned, like, they want to do more... are they the ones who own the Darksiders IP now?
No, that's Nordic.
Okay, yeah. But yeah, so yeah, Crytek UK situation does not seem to be getting any better. The OE positive, and this is going to sound really bitter, is that if they do... maybe somebody will buy the Time Fitness IP because everybody wants to get
into I was saying this, right? I don't like Deep Silver, and I have the like the marketing director for Deep Silver in the USA following me on Twitter, so she saw this, and she actually responded to it. I said, I don't like Deep Silver, but if they were to buy Crytek UK, or even just the Time Splitters license, and then give the Time Splitters license to Volition, that would be great. They would be the best company in the fucking world.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess keeping on our Deep Silver track, I believe they're the ones behind the Dead Islands franchise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was their first big one. And apparently they really, 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 really like that franchise a lot more than most fans do. Because they announced a new game in the franchise after announcing a new game in the franchise at E3.
So they're not only doubling down on Dead Island, they're tripling down on it.
Yeah.
Booyah!
And I don't know if they're being smart or stupid about it, because almost everything's separate. Because, as far as I know, Dead Island 2 is a current-gen PS4, Xbox One exclusive. Dead Island MOBA Epidemic is a PC exclusive, and then the new one, Escape from Dead Island, is for PS3 and 360.
I'll tell you what, if you are one of the very few people that likes Dead Island, and you play games on PC, you are in for a fucking treat. Because you're getting all of those games.
But yes, they announced Escape Dead Island, which is a single-player focused Dead Island game, because heaven knows, when I played Dead Island, I was like, I want to play this on my own. I don't know. I will say this much, I am upset and disappointed in everybody who's getting excited about a Dead Island Troyer. I thought we all learned our lesson after the first game. But there are still people who say, oh, the 6 different, the 6 totally looks better. I'm like, yeah, when they see gameplay, that's when you're on board.
Well, this is the thing, is like, Escape from Dead Island looks, like, tonally different from 2.
Already.
Already, yeah, and I just don't understand it. Like,
it's a weird franchise. Also, isn't this Escape from Dead Island being made by kind of someone... Oh, right, it's made by Fat Shark.
So it'll be a decent game, at least.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's just weird. Like, I mean, we always complain about franchises being built. I don't know many franchises that have 3 concurrent games in development at the
same time. Not even Call of Duty does that.
No. I mean, and I don't think they're all out this year, but it's still insane to kind of have, like, okay, we're working on this MOBA, we're working on this co-op game, and we're working on this single-player game.
Well, I think the thing is, like, MOBA is like everyone is making a MOBA. So I think I can excuse that. They just wanted to slap something on there that kind of catches eyeballs. And the thing with Dead Island 2 and this game, I guess, is like, yeah, we're making Dead Island on current gen, but we still need to get something out of the old consoles to make some money there, because there are a lot of them out there.
Yeah.
I feel like it should have been reversed, though, because...
It's like a pure business move, and not really something like, hey, we really want to expand this franchise. It's like, people kind of know this, and we can... somehow make money off.
And this is the thing. This feeds into why I don't like Deep Silver, because I was saying to somebody that, like, I mean, I don't have a hatred for Deep Silver. They're not EA.
Not yet.
But Deep Silver just doesn't seem to have any taste, and I know that taste is not a thing that you should care about when it comes to, like, business, because obviously it's all about making money, but, like, they just don't seem to, like, they're not expanding the Dead Rising franchise in a way that's meaningful. They're just making more games in the franchise, you know? Oh, this seems to be popular, let's just do one of those, but put Dead Island on it, because there are some people out there that like Dead Island, I guess. You know, Ride to Hell Retribution, I don't know if any other publisher would have actually released that. They would have canned that forever ago before it came, you know. And I just don't... Deep Silver is just a company that just doesn't seem to have any quality to it. Like, they don't say, we need to make really good games, guys. We need to make sure that the customers like them. It just seems like they just make games for the sake of it.
It's a company that's totally just dedicated by the bottom line.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's probably why they can do what they do, though. So...
Yeah. It's, like I said, I think they're going to be the mid-tier publisher of the generation. They're basically going to be Acclaim and THQ and Midway and everybody else formed into one. They just need their fighting game franchise and they're good to go. Speaking of developers, Cliffy B's back in the game, even though I'm pretty sure I really haven't missed him, because he's...
Also, I'm pretty sure he never really left.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like,
When he left Epic, it was always just a question of time. When is he going to announce his new studio and what new game?
Well, he left the games industry, but he was always willing to sort of nudge in back in whenever something happened in the games industry, you know?
And throw pot shots.
Yeah. And give us his opinion that nobody really asked for.
Yeah.
I can't wait to not care about what it is that he's making. I'll tell you that.
Well, I think his studio was outed, right?
Yeah. If the game is announced on the 8th of July.
This is 2 days from recording.
Yeah. I don't know. I never really thought Cliffy B is any kind of genius in game development or something. I like some of his Unreal maps. That's what I can tell you.
Well, I believe this is rumored to be an arena shooter. So there's that.
I mean, if it's an arena shooter, then that would be cool. But
And I believe it's also rumored to be PC only.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, after Cliffy B spoke so much about piracy and how the PC doesn't matter anymore, and oh yeah, but the PC does matter. Whatever. He just, like, the only reason why Cliffy B is of any importance to anybody anyway is because he's just the typical rock star of the games industry. You know, he drives fast cars. He has a beautiful woman at his side. And, you know, he says what he thinks, be it something that people want to hear or not. That's the only reason.
He's loud.
Yeah.
That's the thing about Cliffy B. He's loud. But I don't think he's, like, a development genius. And despite how much I shit on Peter Molyneux these days, that dude at least is a genuine genius. From when you look at his pedigree.
And not to mention is Peter Molyneux's only problem is that he has too much passion for what he does.
Yeah.
Whereas Cliffy B is just a loudmouth, and it's just like, oh, are you still talking? You know?
Or yeah. The guy from Maxis who's no longer making games? Shit.
Is that Will...
Will Wright.
Yeah.
That guy also.
Yeah.
Genuine genius.
And I would say the people that are most like Cliffy B, but are actually tolerable, are the Hauser brothers, because the Hauser brothers know what they're doing. They make very good stuff.
That's true.
And, you know, they have a company called Rockstar, for God's sake.
Well, let's be honest, Hauser guys, Not that loud.
No, they're not.
They're loud once the game comes out. They talk a bunch of shit or something, but then most of the time they're kind of like, eh, whatever.
But for the most part, they're likable. They're the likable kind of loud, whereas Cliffy B just thinks he's more important.
Yeah, but to be fair, that is kind of what the gaming community responds to, are people you can either agree with passionately or hate vehemently. So it makes sense that, I mean, it's the same reason that people like David Jaffe, even though I like his opinions for the most part, but David Jaffe's another one who's really outspoken.
Yeah, but David Jaffe also I have a bit more respect for when it comes to game design.
Yeah.
But mostly because of Twisted Metal, but that might just be me.
Yeah, but what is he even doing these days?
I don't know. I lost track.
Like, I know he started up a mobile studio, and then I think
he's doing some horror thing.
Oh, okay.
That's all I know.
Yeah, let's see, what else do we have? Okay, really quickly, Bandai Namco has picked up publishing rights for Project Cars, which I already mentioned.
I have to correct you there, Bo. They are not actually publishing, they are just distributing, which means the game is technically still self-published.
Oh, okay. That's
they're just the people that make the box and the discs.
Which is a pretty cool box for a racing game. Weird, but cool.
It's out, I haven't seen it.
Yeah. Or at least I've seen one that people say is the official one. It's pretty, let me see if I can actually find it. Unless they changed it.
It's definitely one of those games I'm looking forward to. I'm looking more forward to this one than the new Gran Turismo at this point. Because just, I think, like, a week ago or something, I heard, like, yeah, we are not getting rid of standard cars in the next game. And I can't deal with that. I want PS2 quality models on my PS4. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I had no idea what that meant. I just knew people were getting upset by it.
Yeah, they're basically just taking all those legacy models and putting them into the new game. And no.
I think the weird thing about Project Cars is, like, it's a studio with good racing pedigree. I mean, they're British, so of course they have good racing pedigree.
Don't laugh. It's pretty true.
It is true. We have Codemasters. We had Psygnosis. We have great fucking racing pedigree. Criterion. So they're British. You know, they made things like Shift 2, and the first Shift, And it's just weird because Project Cars has just come out of nowhere. And all of a sudden I see loads of people excited about it.
I don't know if it came out of nowhere. It's been around for...
I mean, it's been around, but, like, out of nowhere I see loads of people getting really hyped for it.
Also, it's a crowdfunded game.
Yeah.
It's kind of an amazing story if you think about it. It's a crowdfunded game that's now coming out for PC and consoles, and it looks really good. And they actually have licensed cars and stuff like that. It's, I think, for simulation car fans, it's a genuine contender.
It should be. It should be a recipe for disaster, and somehow it's not.
Yeah,
it's really weird.
Oh yeah, that's an interesting box card. Yeah.
Yeah, you still gotta wait. You still gotta get the final product. But yeah, so far it seems to be a really interesting thing. And like I said, it's a really pretty box art. It's very different from most games.
I mean, you say you have to wait for final product, but from a lot of people that crowdfund it are already able to play it,
at least.
So they can already say, like, from what I've read, the simulation part apparently is really good. But it doesn't have apparently all the features. Like, I don't think the crowdfund people have had any insight into, for example, the career mode or something. I think it's all multiplayer or something.
I guess speaking of new features, Sunset Overdrive showcased their Chaos Squad mode, which is their 8-player co-op mode in Sunset Overdrive, and I believe the only multiplayer mode in the game. I could be wrong, though.
I have no idea. I haven't watched it. So, someone tell me what's going on there.
It's basically round robins. You get a bunch of different modes and missions you can pick from beforehand. And depending on how you're doing those missions, it affects your final mission, which is basically horde mode, where like you get a night invasion and you have to hold off a certain number of waves of enemies attacking you until you complete it. So it's kind of like resource management and then turns into horde mode, which could be interesting, which can also get old fast. It really depends.
I was just about to say, you lost me at horde mode.
Yeah, that's what that was kind of my reaction too. It's like, oh, this sounds very cool. And then it's like, horde mode. I'm like, oh, okay. So this is just going to be, if you ever played the original horde mode in Halo ODST, that was like fun for a while just because of the achievements, but that was also like an hour. Like there was no like, okay, we're gonna do this in 15 minutes. It was like an hour each time, and that was dedication. Where
an hour? Are you kidding? An hour?
In ODST,
getting the Vidmaster achievements in ODST takes at least 3.5 hours. That's how hard it is, and I know because I had to do it 4 times.
Yes. So it was one of those things where it's like you are going, like if you're going to do that with friends, you and your friends are gonna make a day of it. And this is kind of the same thing. There's no fast way to do it, apparently, because you have to go through, I don't even know if it's a set number, but you have to go through certain missions beforehand, and then you go through this mode. So, I mean, I'm thinking, like, maybe half an hour at a minimum.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting in that it doesn't have any competitive multiplayer, but I thought when they said they were going to do co-op, I thought it would be, like, a co-op story mode and not necessarily a... Oh yeah, you can do bits of the stories, and then the only good thing about...
I kind of have to say, though, I would probably have been more interested in the competitive mode, just because of how the traversal works, because I think that would probably be more interesting than basically just doing the same thing you are doing in single player, but against waves.
Okay. I was going to say, one of the good things about it, and this is the same thing, this is one of the things I've always loved about Kid Icarus Uprising, is that what you unlock in the single player you carry over to the multiplayer, and what you unlock in the multiplayer you carry over to the single player. And if it's balanced well, it doesn't break the game in any fashion, but it is nice to think, oh, I get this mega awesome weapon in single player I can use in multiplayer. And it's like, everything has its weakness and balance, and that was one of the things. Like, you know, I mean, I guess there aren't many other games like that, but, you know, like you go through and it's like, oh yeah, you get these certain guns in multiplayer, and then you get these certain guns in single player.
Yeah.
And that's
when I reviewed Killzone for the Vita, that's also something I liked there. They did the same thing, that single player and multiplayer had the same unlock things.
Yeah.
I like that as well. I think it's a good way to handle that stuff.
Oh yeah, especially if you can balance it well where it doesn't feel broken. Because sometimes, especially if it's a game where you collect a lot of different weapons, you'll find, because I know Sunset Overdrive is one of those things where it's not just a weapon, but you get all these different perks and stuff. So that's kind of cool to carry over. But yeah, I'm kind of curious about that. And I guess for our final bits of news, and I'm sure we're going to make Daniel head this one off. They revealed new details on the Halo Master Chief Collection yesterday at the Rooster Teeth Expo.
And I'm not particularly happy about them. I don't... I just think it's... Okay, so I can understand taking things from Halo 3 or from Halo 4 or from whatever and putting them in Halo 2. That's fine. They changed Ascension, which is the sort of one map that they're demonstrating right now. So it has like a shield in the middle, and that's kind of cool. I kind of like that. I don't know how that would work in most game mode, like how well that would work. I don't know if it is the same as like a bubble shield in the sense that you can walk through them, but you can't shoot through them. So that's fine. I kind of like that. The maps look really nice. Ascension, oh my god, The map is on like an island that's floating above a Halo ring, and you see the Halo ring moving below it, and I was like, oh my god, that looks fucking awesome. And then they were like, oh yeah, and we put a gun on the Mongoose, and I was like, what?
The gun goose.
Yeah, and they called it a gun goose, which is a stupid name. And yeah, playing capture the flag on coagulation with gun geese is great, but the mongoose wasn't ever designed to be an offensive thing. So why did you put guns on it? Like, the point was is you used a mongoose to get in and get out really quickly. And they were a bitch to drive, but you could do it if you knew how to. And like, I just feel like putting guns on them is just making them a little bit OP. And well, not everything needs guns, you know?
I mean, I could be mistaken. I didn't follow the entire thing. But these are also kind of exclusive to, like, just that, like, I guess to that format?
They're exclusive to the format that has stuff in that Halo 2 didn't have. There is also modes that that are Halo 2, strictly Halo 2 only, you know?
Yeah.
And, okay, that's fine, but I just think, like, just adding stuff like that is just...
Well, I mean, again, I mean, I think partially because it is a remaster, and, because, like, again, you have to, like, even with, like, you know, the changes you mentioned to the maps, that is something separate than saying Halo 2 by itself in this game.
I can understand, if they just took the mongoose, like, in its original form, and then put it into coagulation. That's fine. That works great. But I just don't like the idea of them putting guns on it. And, like, the problem that I have with Halo 4 is it seemed like they decided to change one thing and, well, maybe if we change that as well, and then change this, and then change the other. And I'm just worried that, like, that kind of feature creep is happening to Halo Master Chief Collection because... you know, that stuff happens all the time, and, like, the more you put in, the less Halo 2 it is.
Yeah, but again, I go back to the point that you still get the pure Halo 2 experience, like, if you wanted to back to that.
It's not that it isn't
in the game, it's just, like, if... Like, it's a nice bonus. It's like, you get all the stuff that you remember and love, but we also want to try to spruce it up for people who probably, you know, maybe it's been 12 years and you want to see something different with it, and that's fine as well.
It doesn't matter to me anyway, because I'm never going to buy an X-Bone, so...
You say that now.
I'm not going to buy an X-Bone.
The one thing, and I guess this is really a tough thing to get around just because of the amount of content, is I'm not too huge in the UI, because it's just, like, everything on a page.
Are you talking about when you choose maps and stuff?
Yeah.
Well, I know that they've arranged... playlist, so there'll be a Halo 2 maps playlist, so it will only pick from Halo 2 maps, and there's like a for the campaign, there's you can play just Halo 1 and just Halo 2 and just Halo 3 and just Halo 4, or you can shuffle all the levels from all the games, or you can the UI could be better, but I think that as long as they stick to this playlist thing and they split up the games, but they also have good mixes for different modes as well. I think it wouldn't be too much of a problem.
I mean, just from what I saw, it looked like it was a pain in the ass to navigate, but if they do have all those options in there...
Yeah, they should do.
Yeah, I still think it's one of the best deals you're going to get this year.
Yeah, it's a good deal, but it's just unfortunate that I have to buy an X-Bone for it.
Well, it's that unfortunate. That's just how you sell systems.
It's unfortunate for me, because it means I won't get to play it. Because they can release Halo in any Halo in any form, and it won't get me to trust Microsoft again.
You say that now. When into Halo 5, you'll be tempted.
I won't. I'm dreading Halo 5. I'm dreading it.
Okay. I think that's it for us this week. Unless you folks have any news that might have broken or anything we might have missed along the way.
I don't think so.
No.
Aside from that Hearthstone stuff, which I really don't want to get into.
Let's not.
Yeah. We'll be back next week. I don't know. Maybe we'll have a sports cast. Maybe we'll have a retro cast. We'll try to think of something, because honestly, right now, there isn't any new games coming out this week. I could be wrong on that, but I don't think there's any new games coming out this week.
Not that I know.
Not that I know of either.
So we'll find something to waste the time. Show for Daniel, Martin, and myself. This has been Dual Worlds in episode 147.